Coffee with Your Therapist podcast is sponsored by MindGuard Mental Health Tracking and Management. We help psychotherapists and their clients by enabling the clients to report on their mental health while waiting to enter therapy. We are particularly focused on young people and university-aged people, and we will be very interested in talking to clinics and services who address this sector. The benefits to the therapist is that when their client enters therapy, you will already have a deep background profile of how the client perceives their own mental health. The benefit for the client is that they will receive encouraging and supportive feedback while they are waiting to start therapy. Please contact Dr. Edel Crehan via LinkedIn for more information. Thank you. So I'm talking to John Francis Leader, and John, I'm going to surprise you with this question. Where did you get that great name from? I really love it. It's like
West Cork. West Cork.
Really?
That's the answer to a lot of things. Yeah, it doesn't sound particularly West Cork, does it? But, you know, for whatever reason, yeah, West Cork. That's where my father's side of the family are from. That's my father also has the first name John, so that's why the Francis always was very important there as a differentiation. So generally people kept it simple, JFL, so that's where that came from.
Yeah, no, I love it. I thought you're made for the social media age. John, you're very experienced. I'm not sure what to say what you're experiencing, because your range of topics is so wide, but you're a therapist, you're a media person, you're a policy person. Could you tell us, how did you get to this juncture?
Yeah, and thanks so much for having me on. I'm very appreciative of some of the work you've been doing and some of the conversations you've been having. And I just think that this kind of thing is actually really important. And for me, this isn't, you know, just a chance to chat about what I do, but it's very much the point of what I do in many ways, which is, I suppose, science communication in a way, but in a practical way. And that's why, as you mentioned, it tends to tie into a lot of different strands, because I don't think we have the luxury anymore of being in separate boxes. You know, there was a time where maybe psychology people were one place, technology people were another place, et cetera, artists, you know, maybe somewhere else again. But I think there's a really nice move now to try and get our heads together a bit more. And some of us have to wear multiple hats as well to be able to do that. So, I'm a psychologist. I specialize in communications, experiential learning, so the importance of learning by doing, and a lot of work in the intersection of psychology and technology, which is just an increasingly fascinating space. It was always interesting, but it seems like there's no amount going on at the moment in it.
And to be honest, John, I think we're only scratching the surface.
100%. Yeah. Yeah, we're just getting going. And the interesting thing is, and this is where, you know, the experiential piece and the technology piece mightn't immediately seem obvious, the connection. But in a way, humans, we've always been using technology. We've always been leaning on scaffolding of some sort or another. You know, we were never very good at a species of just kind of hiding from the world and not using it. We were always inventing things and building on it in some way.
Yeah.
So it's not new in a sense, but of course, it's taken some very new directions recently, which are fascinating.
And maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that in terms of you're working in Europe as well and some policy issues. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, some of the work I do, so just in terms of professional affiliations, I'm an adjunct research fellow in UCD, University College Dublin, in the Media and Entertainment Psychology Lab there in the School of Psychology.
That sounds like,
so
right there.
That's a great environment. If you're looking for a bit of sci-fi, a bit of fun, practical stuff, it's a great place to be.
I should have done that in college, John. Sorry.
100%. Well, I'm glad it didn't exist when I first studied, but I'm glad it does. Brendan Rooney is the director out there, and there's some really great people and some good stuff happening. And kind of like I've been saying, it's very intersectional. So that's one piece. And then where the policy and the other bits come in, I'm a board member of the Psychological Society of Ireland on their council. And then also a board member of the European Federation of Psychologists Associations, EFPA. And I'm their liaison for mental health. So that's very interesting as a role, because it's a very interesting time for mental health, and we're kind of reimagining it in many ways. So I work a lot with the European Commission and other stakeholders there to do really advocacy and policy work around that, and to ask the questions, what do we want over the coming months and the coming years? And the goal there is to try and create some frameworks that actually support people in a day-to-day sense that have needs. And it's a bit abstract, isn't it? Because like on one hand, we need to focus on the day-to-day and people's needs directly. Yet on the other hand, we're realizing that there are all of these social determinants and other factors of mental health. The expression I often use is sometimes you're not depressed. It's that your life is depressing. That's the
Well, that's
issue.
very interesting.
So it's not either or, obviously. We need to work on our thinking too, but we also need to make sure that people have their basic needs met, that there's a sense of security, and so on and so forth. So a lot of that is where I'm focusing my attention in recent years.
Okay, that's very interesting. And the mental health crisis, I won't say so-called because I do think there's a mental health crisis. Yeah. Is it partly due to people being more open? Is it partly due to greater awareness? Is it partly due to modern life being more stressful? And particularly, we always point a finger at technology, but I think justly, what do you think? Where are we with mental health in general, shall we say?
It's a very good question, and the problem even starts with the terminology, isn't it? Because I'll speak to different people with direct lived experience or professionals in the area or whatever, and a lot of people will say, gosh, we need to all recognize our mental health, and then other people will say, well, look, we also can't conflate it. Some people are in much more severe places than others, and we can't put everything in the same box. And that points to a problem even with the basic terminology, isn't it? That we're trying to use language, but it's a bit hard to know what it even points to. And probably what's behind that is the fact that there are just many, many, many factors involved in our well-being in any given moment. And I was at the European Psychiatric Association's Congress in Budapest there just a couple of weeks ago. And one of the big things that there was a person there who has a specialism in homelessness speaking about that. And he's saying, it's okay to try and improve the mental health and work on cognitive behavioral thinking strategies, but if you still don't have the house to live in, do you know what I mean? That's going to factor, which is, it's a fair and obvious point, but that kind of applies to many other less obvious things, I think, too. So this is where the joined up thinking comes in. So I think it's just a hugely intersectional and complex issue. And basically what the solution is, it's a big challenge, but what the solution is, what's happening more on the European level is the European Commission's comprehensive approach to mental health, and some of the stakeholder organizations are advocating this approach of mental health in all policies. So mental health in all policies,
That's
so
very
that it isn't just
interesting.
seen as a subset of health. So you got your health budget, you got your health policy. There's 101 things going on there. In some corner of that is mental health. That isn't really good enough. We've actually got to be thinking about it across the board.
That's very interesting, John. You mentioned earlier that you're working in an expert, I pronounce this correctly, experiential psychology. I said to you also, I'm happy to ask stupid questions to show my stupidity. What is that and what does it do?
No, absolutely, and me too. And you have to, I think, to jump into these kind of frontiers, you have to be comfortable being uncomfortable to some extent, because there's a lot going on, and there's a lot being renegotiated at the moment in terms of terms and concepts. So experiential learning, what got me into psychology to begin with is probably a good way to answer that question is, I was big into filmmaking, and I studied filmmaking, and I just like media generally. And the ability of a good podcast or a good radio show, or of course a good film or TV show, etc., to just evoke emotions and make you feel a certain way. And for that to be kind of a light form of therapy in a way, isn't it? Because it really can change how you think and feel and get you connected with other ideas and so on. So when you're working in media, the big thing you realize is that it isn't just about factual information. It is about actually making it engaging, and preferably making it experiential. Now, that doesn't necessarily need to mean going somewhere. It can mean creating a vivid picture of it as well. That's one way of doing it, or using virtual technology to simulate it. So if you're listening to radio, that's you're using the imagination maybe more. If you're watching a film in a cinema, a bit more immersive. If you're in Disneyland, even more immersive again, etc. So that's really what it means to take an experiential approach to therapy or training or learning. And certain fields just get this. If you're an airline pilot, There's no way they'll give you a book on flying and expect you to be competent. It's purely about the practice experientially, all about experience, isn't it? So that could be real flight time, it could be flight simulators, or it could be, you know, even imagining it a bit just to get comfortable with the concepts of it. So that's the basic idea. So that interest in that, that's what led me into psychology, and my work is focused a lot on trying to make the various approaches taken more practical and more engaging, more like I call it theme park meets therapy, so more fun and engaging therapy.
Okay, so I could see how that would say would say in learning, I could see definitely that would help. How about in if someone's dealing with, for sake of argument, like anxiety? Well, I can see if you're anxious about flying, you could do it. But what about, is there a limit to what you can do with it? Is it like if someone has a generalized anxiety, and again, I'm not sure what that means. Can it help there, or, you know, how would you use it in these circumstances?
A big part of it is, and every good therapist is really trying to do this, I think, is really be with the person who's in front of them and respond to their needs. So it can mean very different things, I think, in different cases. And it's also important to say that everything in a way is experiential. It could be minimal, but still experiential. So to actually just stop and be there and listen to a person, that's experiential. So there's nothing wrong with that. And that's very important. But there's a sense in which you could consider certainly certain types of therapy to be a bit like physiotherapy in ways. And, you know, if you went for physiotherapy and you said, look, my back is sore or whatever, and if the therapist just sat and listened to you for a while, that would be good. It's very good to be validated. But there's also a sense in where you'd be saying, well, what do I do about it? Can I practice something that's going to help me here? So there's a certain skill development bit, and then a certain bit of confronting challenges and developing competencies around that. So in the example you're mentioning of anxiety, you know, we're working on this out in UCD, the mixed reality therapy project. And what that program really looks at is different forms of scaffolding or experiences you can have to help you with different therapeutic needs. So for anxiety, if somebody has a phobia, for example, we might bring them into the simulator, and we might then bring in the particular item that they're afraid of. And we might first have it in an adjoining room and just talk about it. And then we might walk towards it, and they might say, well, just apprehension alone now, I'm not even seeing it yet, but my heart is beating a bit. In the other room could be anything. We can put in, let's say, an audience if they're afraid of public speaking. It could be an animal that they're afraid of. It could be flying. It could be social anxiety of one shape or form, et cetera, et cetera. So it really can be anything co-created with the person. So being able to evoke that real world sense of what it's like, it's a bit like in the Matrix, where you can kind of pause the simulator for a moment and say, how are you now? What do we need to work with? What skills do we need to develop before you can proceed like that? But it can also be positive stimuli as well. Sometimes somebody needs a nice relaxing stimuli brought in as well. So that's the idea, that general territory.
It's a very powerful idea, isn't it? I mean, it's sort of, I could see, as you say, it makes it real, literally. Okay, it's not literally, but to the senses, it's real at that moment, you know, so that's really interesting. Okay, and in general, is tech a benefit, a hindrance, or all of the above?
Yeah, I really like the approach of thinking that it's potentially both. And the reason I like that approach is I think it brings it back to us, you know, to be in the driver's seat a bit more with it, because really these things are nothing in and of themselves. It's all about the context of how we engage with the thing, and for us as a society, as well as individuals, to take more ownership and responsibility of that. I think that's the way I'd like to see us go. Usually the way I describe it is I'm really not into techno-fetishism, but nor techno-pessimism.
Sorry, John. Yeah, don't be. That's a great word. You come up with as I'll show my pretentiousness, le mot juste, you know, just at the right moment. Go ahead.
We need these words, you know, seriously. And that's it, isn't it? Because it is. It's these extremes. You know, somebody just gets caught up in, you know, tech is great or something. Like, what does that even mean? I mean, you know, clearly anything could be good or bad. You know, your car is very good if you drive it in this direction. It's not if you drive it towards the wall in the other direction, you know. So it really is down to how you use the thing in a given way. So there's a huge piece around skill development, you know, developing competencies. And part of that isn't just about using tech, but it's about knowing our own minds a bit more, knowing what we need and how to meet those needs. So that's, I think, we need to focus on that over the next while.
Mm.
We talked about social determinants in terms of, you know, just socially the situation you're in and how that affects your well-being and mental health. Well, digital social determinants are very much a thing, and gladly a lot of policy, both in Ireland as well as on a European and international level, is recognizing the role of digitalization and how we need to be conscious of where we're spending our time and allocating our energy. So with social media, for example, I could work with, let's say, two people in the same week, somebody who's quite addicted to it, and it's really bringing them down and they're feeling negative. Somebody else who maybe doesn't have resources in their life, and they're finding online people, communities to connect with that's inspiring them, and they're then taking real world action because of what they're learning online. So it's that kind of a distinction, I think.
Yeah, my own social media journey was sort of... this is intriguing. Got a bit addicted. Ended up arguing with a bunch of strangers about nothing. And finally backing off, going like, why am I getting upset about this stranger said something? Usually an anonymous stranger. I said, look, just enjoy it for what it is. And just walk away from all these situations or mute. I don't get involved.
Exactly, yes. You're 100% right. And this is where some of the toolkits that have been around for a long time, meditation being an obvious example of how, you know, various forms of meditative practice have tended to be incorporated into modern psychology. And it's nice because they have a decent evidence base now. You know, a few decades ago, it might have been a bit just taking guesses that it might be good for you. But now we've good research. And, you know, some of those skills to be able to recognize that you have attention, to be able to manage it, to be able to pull it back, to be able to deliberately and consensually engage, they're the kind of skills that are really important with technology engagement. And of course, with topics like artificial intelligence, that becomes even more important, where we're, again, actually thinking a bit more and being a bit more purposeful and deliberate.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. The whole we could do it different. We could do an hour on AI and
at least
where that's going. Yeah. Okay, John, look, that's really fascinating. And the range of topics you've covered and your insights, I mean, really fascinating. Thanks for that. So at the end of the week, Friday, the 5 o'clock whistle rings or whatever you have, the dog barks, I don't know what it is. How do you chill out yourself? How do you relax and get perspective yourself?
Well, I have this idea that, you know, I think of my experiential diet. So talking about having experiences. So if you think about diet in that sense, you need to have some of this, some of that. It needs to balance. You know, it's not about one nutrient. It's about a mix of nutrients that are good for you. And that's generally advice I give to everybody. It's good to tune into what your experiential diet is and what you need. But for me, I think it's counterbalancing thinking a lot, because I have to do that as part of my work with moving. So that's definitely an important part of it. So time in nature, very good. You know, walking. Getting out and about, being active is, I think, absolutely critical. But nature would be a big part of it, I think, for me. And getting to see interesting places, architecture, buildings that just evoke a certain feeling. You know, when you're standing in a place and you feel a certain way, I think those kinds of things definitely nourish me. Definitely the social side, interesting people as well as part of it. But again, it has to be balanced, isn't it? Because any one of those things, you could overdo them. So it's about having enough engagement with people, enough time alone, enough busy time, enough quiet time, enough outdoors, enough indoors. So kind of listening to that is what I try to do.
Yeah, no, it's very true. I mean, it's sort of interesting. Like I'm pretty social. I'm probably an extrovert, but even I need time alone. You know, like say if you go to a party, you talk to people for a few hours. When I get home, I don't want to talk to anybody. I just want to I want to have a beer, watch TV, be mindless for an hour, you know, just chill. But okay, John, so on this podcast, the guest gets to nominate the playout song. It's always an interesting moment. Sometimes it's been a bit stressful for some guests. So tell me about your music and tell us what you'd like to play out on, please.
Yeah, so I like a really diverse range of different types of music, because again, I find just different music does different things. But, you know, when I was reflecting on what would be a good choice, well, one song that came up for me felt meaningful was Absent Friends by The Divine Comedy. And there's something about that, I think, and the sound of it that's just on a very direct level meaningful. But there's also something about the passage of time that it brings up, and how people influence us in our life, even if those people aren't around anymore. So there's something kind of therapeutic about that theme I felt that resonated with me. And also, I think it just the storytelling relates. There's a lot of references in it that, just talk about narratives. So we're living a story right now as we're living our life. So it's nice to remember that sometimes, and again, be in the driver's seat when we can.
Yeah, no, they're a great group. And what's the leader's
Neil Annan.
Neil, yeah, sorry, his name skipped my mind. But yeah, he's an incredible songwriter and probably very underestimated even today, I think,
Yeah, they've
with
got some
him.
very good stuff, that's for sure. But yeah, that song seemed to hit the spot.
Okay, here it is now. And really, thanks, John. Really found it fascinating and appreciate your time.
Great to see you, and again, appreciate all the good work you're doing in the space.
Absent friends, here's to them. And happy days, we thought that they would never end. Here's to absent friends. Little Jean Seberg seemed so full of life, but in those eyes, such troubled dreams. Oh, little Jean. Woodbine Willie couldn't rest until he'd given every bloke a final smoke before the killing. The great escape he tried to make was not to be. Maybe next time, Steve. Like a flu through inky blue, to like a near the atmosphere and like a near. Like his life was through. Oscar Wilde was a lonely child. He fought and won acceptance from the world. They smiled, they laughed, they prayed.
Glasses.